Good afternoon. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Urban Show. We're very happy to continue this series of interviews with the primary candidates. Today we have Secretary Mack Warner, who's running for governor. So could you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. I'm Mack Warner. I've been elected twice as Secretary of State for the state of West Virginia, and I am running for governor.
Let's jump in with a couple of questions. What do you think the greatest problem facing West Virginia is right now, in your opinion?
It's education, education, education. Improving education is going to be the foundation of my administration. And I say that, one, I think many people are aware of the shortage of teachers that we have throughout the state, over 1,200 positions. And recruiting and retaining teachers is becoming more and more difficult. There are a number of factors to that. Among which is pay, insurance, that sort of thing. But it goes deeper than that. It goes into the discipline within the schools. They're being asked to be teachers, counselors, parents, a lot of roles beyond what they probably what brought them into the teaching profession. And that is sharing their life experiences and their specific subject matter expert with the students. So what I want to do is take some of those pressures off of the teachers, making sure that we get qualified teachers in the classrooms. If we don't have teachers in those classrooms, all we're doing is warehousing children. And I've been to school after school after school where, in some cases, they simply have to send students to study halls or to the cafeteria to wait out a period until their next class begins where they do have teachers in the classroom. That's a terrible situation. We're not going to have our children educated and ready for the workforce or to higher education or to go into vocational skills if we don't have them educated. So that's the main problem we have in the state. We certainly have a number of other challenges, but that's where I'm going to put my focus.
Okay. So with the teacher shortage, so we frequently hear about, you know, disparity of pay, especially over here in the Eastern Panhandle. You know, it's a very common thing. You know, people will live here, and if they're a teacher, they work in Loudoun County, whatever. Do you think that's like the biggest issue? Or are there, and you mentioned discipline. I know I was at a Board of Education meeting, and there was that was discussed, although the Board of Education candidates are telling me it hasn't really been addressed. What more could be done? Because they already have clear policies. I was told by one of the Board of Education members that what's happening is, although the policies are in place, the school administrators, some of them, not all, don't want to look bad, so they don't want to report the discipline problem, so they'll be rated as a bad school or school in need of whatever attention. Do you have any comments on that?
Sure. The main thing that I can do as governor and then with the Board of Education is to make sure that we have the teachers back, have the administrations back. I don't want the teachers or administrators to be fearful of a lawsuit because one child makes a complaint or whatever. I did hear of a situation out in the Eastern Panhandle where a teacher decided to retire because she was chastised by the principal after she had gone down the hall, the bell had rung, the kids were supposed to be in class, and she told a group of three girls to get back in the class. She said, girls, get back in the class. And one of them apparently may have been self-identifying as a gender other than a girl and reported her. And rather than backing up the teacher, who was simply trying to do the right thing, the teacher was admonished. And so I would certainly be in that situation talking with the principal and the Board of Education saying, look, they're there to teach. The children weren't in the classroom. The children were in the wrong, not the teachers. So I want to back the teachers, let them know that we've got their back. The pay in the Eastern Panhandle is certainly a challenge. I'm in favor of a locality pay if that's what is necessary. I've heard about teachers leaving Berkeley County and Jefferson County to go over to Loudoun County, Virginia, one of the wealthiest counties, if not the most in the nation, where they get paid considerably more. I want to make our pay competitive here in West Virginia. So again, we take that off the table as a reason to lose teachers and get the ones that are good qualified teachers to stay here in West Virginia without having to worry about that decision to make. I want to drive a half hour to go teach in another state. And out there, you're challenged with Maryland, Virginia, even Pennsylvania. So we've got to stay competitive.
Okay, fair enough. So you mentioned the, you know, in passing, the gender identity issue. We know that's come up a lot about. So I was talking with a delegate candidate about the fact that our law that does ostensibly prevent gender change, restricting, you know, the prescriptions and things for like puberty blockers. But it has apparently a huge loophole that says, you know, if the child says they're suicidal or something, they can get it anyway. So that this delegate candidate, Daphne Andrews, didn't think that was sufficient. Do you have any opinion about that?
Look, we're here to teach children, and this whole issue of transgender dysphoria and those sorts of things, let's let the doctors and the parents deal with those. I think the legislature is taking a responsible approach towards this. And of course, now the courts have weighed in. We start to now get into the whole issue with sports and whether boys can play on the girls' sports teams and that sort of thing. God made man and woman. And right. I certainly don't want boys getting dressed in girls' locker rooms, especially with some of the stories that are coming out of Harrison County and where this is now led into the courts, where a young boy or man is in a girls' locker room making comments about the other children's anatomy and even his own anatomy. That is such a distraction from schools and doesn't need to be a part of it. And again, I will back the administration to make sure we have proper procedures in place, policies in place to make that as less of a distraction as possible.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. What about the Hope Scholarship Program? Are you a proponent of that? Do you think that that is a good program that could or should be expanded?
I am a proponent of the Hope Scholarship. I'm a proponent of school choice. As many choices as parents want to have, they should have. The focus always needs to be on the child. I have a personal experience with my own family where in the public schools, first couple of children were just fine, but the third child started running with the wrong crowd, was not having the grades and the attention span that she should have. And so we put her into a private Christian school, and she changed 180 degrees. It came out tremendously successful. One or two of her classmates that she was running with didn't turn out as well, that remained in the public school. So I'm a firm believer in giving parents a choice. They know their children the best. They know what type of learning environment that the children are best will best thrive in. And I want to give those parents the options that they need to raise their children properly.
Okay, fair enough. That's good. So back in, I believe, the 2021 legislative session, when Governor Justice put out a lot of mandates, particularly the House of Delegates moved to fix those, but then they were gutted, I believe, mostly by Senator Trump in the Senate. And anyway, nothing was ever passed to limit the like scope of mandates to some limited time, or the legislature could revoke the mandates. Do you think that's an issue? Like, should those kind of unending mandates, should we fix that? In other words, if this comes up again, would you be in favor of fixing that so the legislature could review any mandates, or there's certain limits?
Absolutely. I think we need to address that. I can tell you from my experience, I come from a military background, a national security perspective. And we went through all this back in the 70s, 80s with the War Powers Act. And from a military perspective, a president, a commander in chief, can exercise his executive authority for 30, 60 days. But at some point, he has to go back to Congress and ask for authorization to continue to spend money if he has deployed forces somewhere else in the world. So using that as an analogy in a governor's situation, I think the governor needs to do the same sort of thing. The ultimate power should lie in the legislative branch. And particularly, it starts in the House of Delegates. That's why we have our elections every 2 years. We want those House of Delegates to represent us, be our voice in the state government, and they should be the closest to the people. And so if there is a concern there within the House, the Senate, absolutely we need to address that. I can tell you, as governor, I would not extend that authority. I would take care of the immediate need, but it shouldn't extend 60, 90, 100 days, 120 days. Typically an emergency, a flood situation, a mine explosion, you know, those types of disastrous situations that West Virginia is accustomed to usually don't last more than 30 days. So I'm not going to be, you know, a dictator and try to assume that authority. back to the issue with COVID specifically, we shouldn't have been shutting down schools. We shouldn't have been shutting down churches and those sorts of things and leaving Walmarts and other places open. There needs to be a common sense approach to this. And so this is, again, something that I think parents, individuals can make their own individual choices about. The same thing goes with vaccinations. I'm a Republican. I'm a constitutionalist. And when the Constitution gives specific powers to the governor or to the executive branch, those need to be enumerated. If they're not enumerated, then it stays with the states, with the legislatures. And I simply won't be that type of government. I will lean on the individual and freedom approach to things rather than saying that I know the best and dictating that to the people of West Virginia.
Okay, fair enough. So related to that, just to clarify specifically, like recently, as you know, Governor Justice vetoed the limited what could be called the vaccination choice or religious exemption for private schools and virtual schoolers. So he vetoed that. Would you have done that? Do you support, I think I heard you say it, but specifically, do you support like a vaccination choice, which is a pretty hot issue here in West Virginia for decades now, that we're telling children, no vaccines, no school. Do you support that policy, or would you like to see like religious or conscience exemptions or what?
I would have signed that bill as opposed to vetoing it like Governor Justice. Again, I'm back to the personal responsibility. That should be a choice of parents. Again, I have a personal experience where I took a child in for vaccinations, and the needle they were ready to stick in my child's arm was huge. I knew it wasn't right. I insisted on seeing the doctor. The nurse pushed back. I insisted. Finally, when the doctor came in and analyzed the situation, he said there was three times the amount of dosage that should have gone into that child. So I'm very fortunate that they didn't stick that needle in the arm. Parents have that responsibility. And so the parents should be the ones who decide whether a child is immunized, what immunization they get, and so on. So I would agree with the religious exemption. Absolutely.
Great. Good to hear that. Now, going over to the issue of election integrity, is there anything, now you're Secretary of State, so I know that's one of your responsibilities. Do you feel like, I'll stay in the first person. One question I had is like, so in like 2016, when I went to vote, we had many here in Jefferson County, we had plenty of voting stations. They were using paper ballots, although I know they tabulate them with the machine. And then they went more toward the machine, and there was a big backup because they didn't have enough. They got more, but there's still backup. But I'm wondering, I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, counties can choose whether they want to use these machines or not. But why are we using them? Aren't there like inherent risks in having these extra technologies like machines? And then we have tabulators, and people are saying in Arizona, they're not accurate. And from what I read, there seems to be something to the argument. So how can we ensure integrity? And should we do anything differently?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because it's a very common question, and I appreciate the opportunity to answer it about what's happening here in West Virginia. Express vote system, which now this election, all 55 counties are going to have the express vote system that gives people the option to use the electronic pen marking device. And I want to emphasize that it is a pen marking device. It is not a computer. It's not connected to the internet. All this is it reduces the, or virtually eliminates the human error. So think about taking that SAT or ACT test back in high school where you had to fill in the ovals with a pencil. So many mistakes can be made with that. Sometimes people underline it. Sometimes they only partially fill it in. They put an X or a check mark. Any of those sorts of stray marks can invalidate that ballot. Or let's say it's a city council or a board of education that says vote for two. Well, if you mark a third person, you can do that with a pencil and it invalidates that vote. Whereas with an electronic marking device, it won't let you vote more than two for the people, the ones you're authorized. If you try to do a third, it will ask you to remove one of the other choices or notify you can't mark more than two. So it reduces or eliminates that human error and also fills in the oval completely for you. Then that piece of paper comes back out. It's called a voter verified paper trail. So when it comes back out, the voter gets to actually look at that piece of paper And it's the same technology that we use at Sheetz for ordering a wrap or a sandwich. Yes, I want pickles. No, I don't want mayonnaise, that sort of thing. And you can see on your receipt exactly what you ordered. That's what's going on with this ballot. Yes, I voted for a particular president or governor or senator. And if it's not correct, you can invalidate it before you put it into the tabulator. They will spoil that ballot, give you a new one, and they'll do it again. If there's a problem with the machine, they'll fix the machine or get you to another. But then the voter themselves puts that ballot into the tabulator. And what happens is that tabulator, at 7:30 in the evening when the polls close, it can give you an automatic total that night. That's why here in West Virginia, we can give unofficial results on election night. And typically, those are what stand, unless it's an extremely close race. And that's what people want for confidence in the elections, is to know on election night who wins the races. Now, I say unofficial because we do have the 6-day waiting period. In this case, the election day is May 14th. Canvassing occurs 6 days later on May 20th. And the reason for that delay is to give people a chance that have voted absentee, let's say our soldiers overseas, gives them time for those ballots to come in to the county courthouse. Now, that's when, once those absentee ballots and any questioned ballot is determined by the county commission, which ones count, which ones don't, then that's when we give official results. I wanted to get back, though, real quickly to the county clerks are the people who run these elections in each of the counties. They are the election official for that county. Mm-hmm. Once they have certified the results, they send them to me, and then I certify the state's results. But the county clerks are the key people. So if you want to vote a paper ballot, you can ask that precinct worker for a paper ballot. But I think most everybody now that has tried that express vote system likes it. They understand it. There may be a little hesitation the first time a county uses it, but after they've used it, it does keep the lines moving much faster. It's more efficient. And I can tell you, there have been a dozen races that I've supervised over the state in all 55 counties and all those. We've only had 5 instances where there's been any discrepancy between the paper ballot and the tabulated ballot. And when we go back and check a second time, we find out it was human error that miscounted, not the machine. So I haven't had one case in all 55 counties and a dozen or more elections where the machine has made a mistake in the tabulation.
Okay.
So that's why I get back to emphasizing the security of the elections here in West Virginia. Mm-hmm.
So is the, when the paper ballots are fed into the tabulator, so that is that verified with the number of like voters who signed in?
Yes, absolutely. That's why we keep the tabs off the ballots, know how many people voted. And if there's any discrepancies, then we're going to resolve that during the auditing process.
You're saying if you wanted a paper ballot, you can get one at a polling station?
You can ask for one. You can ask for one, yes.
And they'll stick, this still goes in the same machine, or they have to do something different with it?
Well, it's going to have to be probably hand counted depending on the number of them. It depends on the tabulation system that county has.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I noticed also that I think our votes for since 2018, we send them to some third party. I forget the name of it, some large system that reports them on the state site. Is it some, why don't we do it ourselves being the state of West Virginia?
The official results do come from my office, the Secretary of State's office. There are newspapers and news agencies that get to the courthouse and get the county courthouse results from the county clerks and then make their projections and so forth. But the officials come from my office.
So we don't use like a third party reporting, I mean, on the state website?
No.
Oh, okay. Maybe I guess I'm mistaken on that. Okay, very good. So what do you think? Do you agree like that the decline of two-parent husband-wife families is a driving force between all societal problems? And then what can government do? I mean, about that, or what would be the thing that we should do? Because I know here in West Virginia, 47% of births are outside of marriage. And in my mind, that's really the driving force behind everything else. Would you agree, disagree, any comments?
I want to rephrase it a little bit. I will strongly enforce and encourage the two parent families, a husband and a wife, a mother and a father. And so I want to encourage that in every way possible from a state's perspective. That's the foundational unit of society, has been since the beginning of man. And so that's the state's job. That's why I'm against the same-sex marriage approach, and just think we've gone down the wrong path in that regard. And the entitlements that go to folks, the birthing of babies shouldn't be a money-making proposition for people. We need to encourage people to be married, to have children in wedlock, and it comes from my biblical perspective on life. I'm a born-again Christian, unashamedly, and that's what the Bible professes. I think that's what tradition has shown over centuries, millennia, and that's where I will stand and encourage here in West Virginia.
Do you think that kind of related, like actually I work with a nonprofit in that area, but that abstinence from sex before marriage should be the standard for like school-age children?
Absolutely.
Okay. Great. Yeah, I mean, that was codified into the Title V of the federal like standards for grants, although it's not as common nowadays, but I think it would be helpful. Well, that's good to know. Well, as I guess we're coming closer to the conclusion, are there other issues that are close to your heart or that you'd like to enumerate? And would you like to differentiate yourself from your opponents or any? Would you like to speak on those issues?
Sure. As far as differentiating myself from the other opponents, I'm the only veteran in this race. I'm the only teacher. I am the one with the most experience. So I've got my senior status. And so I know what it feels like living on a fixed income. You don't join the military to become rich. So I don't have the millions of dollars that the other candidates have. I was asking one of the debates, all of the candidates were asked if they would put their interests in a trust fund. And of course, the other three candidates, the major candidates, said yes, they would. And it got to me, and I was like, I don't have money to put into a trust fund. So I can relate to, I think, most of the West Virginians much better than the opponents. One opponent has accepted $10 million from the Club for Growth, which is an anti-Trump organization, yet he tries to claim that he's the Trump candidate and that sort of thing. And I would ask people to consider, why would an out-of-state special interest group put $10 million into a governor's race in West Virginia when Governor Justice, who is a billionaire, only put $5 million in to win his race? I don't think they're interested in winning a governor's race. They're positioning that candidate to win a Senate race in 2026 or to appoint himself as senator should something happen to one of our sitting senators. So I'm not running for this position to run for another office like U.S. Senate or whatever. This will be the pinnacle of my career. I've had my entire adult life has been one of public service. This would be the ultimate public service. It's giving back to this state that has given me so much, to whom much has been given, much is expected. And this is my opportunity to return the wonderful life that I've had in from West Virginia, those experiences back to the people of West Virginia. I've had experiences all over the world with thriving societies and with broken societies. I've learned from both of those, and that's what I'll bring to the table. One of the other candidates is also accepted, and understand we're having a Republican primary.
Right.
One of the other candidates is receiving consulting advice from the former Democrat chair of the party of West Virginia. And I think that's just a real abomination. I don't think any true Republican should be considering letting the former Democrat chair, and you know what they've done to the Democrat Party in West Virginia, they've driven it into the ground. Why would we be taking consulting advice from him to put him? It's like a Trojan horse getting inside the governor's mansion. I would urge the Republicans in this race not to vote. And I'm speaking of Moore Capito in this situation. His advisor, Larry Puccio, was an advisor to Joe Manchin, Joe Manchin's right-hand man. He was an advisor to Democrat Governor Justice when Justice ran as a Democrat. And right. Now he's advising Moore Capito. So strong differentiation between me and those two candidates.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, thank you for coming on today. I mean, really appreciate your time and giving us clarity on, you know, these different, you know, issues that are facing West Virginia. Also, and it just came up about the, you know, the new regulations that are trying to throttle, well, ongoing, but even more strict, throttle coal production. Would, you know, you fight against that? The, like, more or less regulations that seem to be attempting, like the one that just came out, to shut down coal power plants. What would be your ideas on that?
The good Lord gave us these resources. It's our job to be good stewards. That doesn't mean cutting them off completely. It means using them properly. And I talk about reliable energy and unreliable energy. So coal is certainly a reliable energy. We need that for our baseline electricity. And so I am an all energy proponent. And that means that we let the capital market decide which energy source we use and which one we don't. And government is not a good group to be the decision maker in which energy thrives and which one is cut off. Let's let the market decide that. I'm a capitalist. That's what the Republican Party represents. And I can check off every one of those planks in the Republican Party. So if you have a question about where Mac Warner stands, open the Bible to begin with, open the Constitution second, and third, open the Republican Party platform. And if you've covered those, you'll pretty much know where Mac Warner stands on any of the issues.
Okay, that's good to know. Would you like support? Anyway, I'm a senior, and I noticed that on property taxes, actually I have a second property too, but I wouldn't consider myself rich or anything. Any case, the point is that means I'm paying the full double the home rate. Anyway, I've noticed that the property tax rates, of course, in some counties like Jefferson are high, but also like on some properties and my neighbors, it went up 130% in 1 year. Like, wow. So I'm just wondering if you would support any kind of cap on like the amount of property tax increases, or have a look at property taxes and if they're being done well or properly.
Well, I'll go back to the previous question, and that is the Republican Party platform, and Republicans are against higher taxes. We do have an obligation to do certain things that are enumerated in the Constitution. One of those is to provide public education. Of course, we need to do roads. At the national level, we have to have a national defense. So some taxes are essential to being able to perform the duties that are given to us in the Constitution. It is always a balancing act as to what is the appropriate amount and what is the vehicle by which we go. So it's like a balloon. Sometimes you squeeze one side and it pops out somewhere else. So if you try to reduce the tax in one area, you may be looking at increasing the tax in the other to receive the same level of benefits. Now, if we're all in agreement to cut a certain amount of benefits, again, that's the legislature's prerogative. And I'm a firm believer in the legislative process. So what the situation you describe sounds like something we need to deal with at the local level to get the right representation in there to represent the views of Jefferson County or the various places in the Eastern Panhandle. And that's not something, as a governor, I will propose lower taxes whenever possible. But at the same time, I'm going to get the job done the people elected me to do. And that is take care of the state from before birth till natural death and everything in between. So that includes education, health care, safety, police, jails, that sort of thing. All those have to be addressed so that we can live in a free and fair society.
All right. Thank you. Well, thank you for coming on today. Appreciate it. And if there's anything in conclusion you want to say, feel free.
Well, we're filming this on April 30th. Early voting starts on May 1st and it goes through May 11th. And then the election itself is on May 14th. So as the Secretary of State, the Chief Elections Officer, I feel obligated to make sure that everybody is aware of those dates. If you're voting absentee, you have until May 8th to request that absentee ballot. You do have to be able to check one of the 11 prescribed reasons to vote absentee. But if you have any questions about anything election related, go to govotewv.com or check with your county clerk. Those are the trusted sources, the Secretary of State and the county clerk's office.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you very much. We'll make this available on any podcast platform at the Rich Durbin Show and on by video podcast at visionroot.org. I really thank you for your time and coming on today.
Absolutely. Good being with you. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much.